The Jericho Network on Westwood One. All right, you've hit the download button on the Friday edition of Talk is Jericho. Thanks for kicking off your weekend with me. And today, I've got the big guy, Ryback, is here. He's back in the WWE after battling some serious injuries, but he's healthy now. He had a great match against Kane on Sunday's TLC pay-per-view. We're going to talk a lot of wrestling with Ryback. We're going to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger. We're talking about how he lives his life with a positive slant. And yes, we're going to address the comments that CM Punk recently made about him. He digresses with what was said about him. All of that is coming up, very timely. But first, I want to get my snack on with Nature Box. Had a lot of good recommendations lately. I tried the pumpkin nom noms. Really like those. Thanks, listener Nikki. Always have my faves, which you know, the coconut cashews. I tried the Italian bistro pretzels. They taste like garlic bread, which is a good thing, unless you're going to be kissing a girl, in which case you better hope that she has some garlic bread bistro pretzels as well. I'll definitely order them again, though. They're tasty, tasty. And hey, if you haven't jumped on the Nature Box bandwagon, you need to do it. I'm going to give you the opportunity to try Nature Box for free. Yes, you can get a free trial box of snacks. All you gotta do is go to naturebox.com/Jericho. That's naturebox.com/Jericho. And Naturebox will send you a free trial box featuring five of their most popular snacks. They got hundreds of delicioso snacks to choose from. And they're the kind of snacks you won't feel guilty about eating. No. And if you got a fave, you gotta let me know on the Twitter. At Talk is Jericho. I'll give you a shout out right here on this show. And on top of that, naturebox.com snacks are better for ya. They got zero artificial flavors or colors. They got zero trans fat. They got zero artificial sweeteners. Zero guilt when you eat them. NatureBox even has gluten-free snacks, which my friend DDP will love. So go to naturebox.com/Jericho now and get your free trial box of delicioso snacks. That's naturebox.com/Jericho. Tasty. Where can I get some of that at naturebox.com/Jericho.
The following program is a podcast1.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler,
best-selling author,
actor,
and lead singer of Fozzy.
Now
he's rocking the podcast world.
Yay!
This is Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho,
starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. The spell you're under has been broken by Chris Jericho, and it's Friday.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday.
The remedy for boredom has arrived. Let's go for a ride.
Yearning, he tried to believe, a bleeding.
thought I'd kick it into gear with some extra aggressive music. Brides of Fire from the new Fozzy record. Do You Want to Start a War? I had a guy that came and saw us, I believe it was in Tampa, that was begging us to play that song. He's begging us. He said it was the greatest song ever written. He loves the tune. Glad you enjoyed it. Glad you enjoyed the record and glad you are enjoying this show. After the huge episode 100 with Paul Stanley, what a great show that was. If you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out now. Whether you like Kiss or if you don't even know Kiss, which is impossible, Paul Stanley, my hero, went and tracked him down, got him on episode 100, and it was one of the best interviews. People have been commenting. They've been saying this is the best Paul Stanley interview they've ever heard. I'm going to go on to the Twitter. People sent this at I Am Jericho. People saying, like, at the real T. Davis, being a Kiss Online fan, that was the best Paul Stanley interview I've ever listened to. Thank you, Paul, and I Am Jericho. Well, thanks to you. And at Hard Rock Dad says, best Kiss Paul Stanley interview ever? Maybe. Well, I sure as heck think so. Thanks to all of you who checked out the amazing Paul Stanley interview. And I'm keeping it rolling. I got Ryback, the big guy, is back in the WWE right now. Battled through some tough injuries, but he's healthy now and he's back with a vengeance. I sat down with him in Detroit Rock City last Monday before Raw, where I was the general manager. Had a great time on Raw as the general manager. I said I was general manager in the first segment, and then I was reprimanded and told I'm not the general manager, I'm running Raw. So I had a good time running Raw on Monday. Lots of work to do. I had 4 segments in the first 2 hours, including a long opening promo, which are always a challenge, but I got to work with Paul Heyman and Seth Rollins and John Cena, 3 of my favorites to work with, especially always fun to verbally joust with Heyman. We came up with the idea for the fact that he owed me $200. I Am the Walrus, Goo Goo Gajube was nice. There's a lot of musical references. I Am the Walrus, Goo Goo Gajube for Paul Heyman. Then there was a Detroit Rock City at the beginning. Obviously, that's Kiss. There was a Scaramouche, Scaramouche, Can You Do the Fandango? That was Queen. Then there was a Dance All Over Your Face. I told Fandango was in a Dance All Over His Face. That is also Kiss. So there was quite a few of those. There was Clairvoyant. I used the word clairvoyant. That was a little Maiden homage. So, always fun to throw little clues and little shout-outs to the people that get those when I'm in the ring. And had a great time with Paul putting together the match. I think my favorite segment of the show is with Rusev and Lana, though. They're a great act. I love that act. She does an amazing job. And we basically put that all together. I mean, we worked on it earlier in the day, but didn't really have a lot of time to go over it. And I just made up a lot of it in the ring, which is always one of my favorite things to do. Yeah, the Rusev and Lana sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. When I said she looked like she had a pineapple on her head. When I said that you're not supposed to wear the same outfit twice in a row if you're a girl. All that stuff was just made up on the spot, and she went with it like a pro. Great, great future for Lana and Rusev. Like I said, an amazing act. And that was a lot of fun to get out there. And it's always nice to have a female foil to shoot on, to insult. The U.S. champ and the communist tramp was my favorite, actually. people are like, that's so juvenile. It's fifth grade humor. What's wrong with you? Well, that's what Jericho does when he's insulting. And I like it when people go, too, nice outfit, nice scarf. What are you trying to do? You trying to look young? It's like, I'm not trying to look young. That's just how I dress, man. You know, I'm Y2J. I dress like that. And you know why it's cool? Because I'm wearing it. That's why. Yeah, boy. That's a Paul Stanley answer if I ever heard one right there, for sure. And then, of course, the match, quote-unquote, with Paul Heyman, which led to the annihilation by Brock Lesnar. People going, oh, Y2J, you're coming back and jobbing out. What's wrong with you? It's called putting over somebody. It's called taking one for the team. I'm not going to be around on a lot of shows upcoming. Brock Lesnar will be. So good for him. That's the way you make somebody. He's the champion. He's in the main event of the next pay-per-view. And let's face it, probably going to be in the main event of WrestleMania as well. So that's give him some of his due and put the guy over. Come on, guys. That's not jobbing out. That's called good business. And speaking of good business, I wanted to get Ryback on my show for a while. And now with all the controversy that stemmed over him from the last few weeks, I decided it was the perfect time to sit down with him in Detroit Rock City. And he's got quite the story to tell, being fired from developmental a few times, getting a second chance and a third chance, finally making it through up into the major leagues until suffering such a severe injury that doctors told him he'd never wrestle again. And boy, did he prove them wrong. Plus, we'll talk about the comments that CM Punk made about him recently, and Ryback will defend those comments and give his point of view. All of that coming up. But first, I got to say thanks to my great sponsors who let me do this show for you for free for twice a week. And a big thank you to all of you, the Jerichoholics, for supporting my sponsors. Without you and them, I would not be able to do this. And that includes Amazon. Every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show. So you can... Every time you use one of the Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada A. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. You can buy anything you want. I mean, Christmas is coming up. People are asking for all sorts of things. Paul Stanley's book, Face the Music. You got to check that one. It's amazing. I'm reading Billy Idol's book right now, Dancing with Myself. That'd be cool to buy that, and be cool if I get Billy Idol on this show, I'll tell you what. Or how about my new book, The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. The third bestseller, New York Times bestseller that I've written, and a lot of people are saying it's their favorite. Check it out. Or you can buy Do You Want to Start a War, the new Fozzy record. You can buy the new Kiss record, Monster. So many things you can get. Take care of all your entire holiday shopping at Amazon. You can buy anything. But hey, the truth about use my links, buy whatever you want. Won't cost you anything extra. That's the truth. No hidden fees or extra charges. So if you happen to be doing some Amazon shopping, you can help out this show in the process. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Bookmark it so you can get to those links in one easy click. All right. Cinderblock Party World Tour continues in 2015 with the Dirty Youth. That starts March 4th in Belfast, Ireland. Then we're going to Cork and Dublin. And then we're heading to Nottingham, Wolverhampton, Manchester, Glasgow, London, Bristol, Exeter, Southampton, Brighton, all across the UK and Ireland. Then heading over across the pond to Paris, Pratteln, Switzerland, Munich, Mannheim, Bochum, Germany. So many great shows coming up. If you want to know information, you want to find tickets, you want to get VIP, we have one of the best VIP packages you can get. That's at FozzyRock.com. You want to go check that out right now. And as I announced yesterday, I am getting ready to do the Y2J Winter Tour with the WWE. Select dates only. January 10th, Montgomery. January 11th, Mobile, Alabama. January 16th, St. Louis. 17th, Las Vegas. 18th, Houston. 23rd in Trenton, New Jersey. 24th, East Rutherford, New Jersey. January 31st, Edmonton. February 1st, Calgary, Alberta. February 7th, Jacksonville, Florida. 8th is Canton, Ohio. 14th, Tampa. 15th, Fort Myers. 27th of February, Madison Square Garden. February 28th is Toronto. March 1st, Buffalo. Those are the dates of the Y2J WWE Winter Tour, and those are the only dates. So please do not ask me, are you coming to Scranton? Are you coming to Sheboygan? Are you coming to Des Moines? No, the answer is I won't be coming to any of those cities. I'm only doing those select dates, and they're all non-televised. There's no Raw. There's no SmackDown. There's no pay-per-views. They're just the live events. I'm like the anti-Brock Lesnar. I just work the shows that aren't televised. But I'm doing it basically for two reasons. One, because I always enjoy it. I have fun. That's the first reason. Second reason is for all of you. Hopefully some of you are in that area. You can come check out Y2J on the Winter WWE World Tour. I guess it's not the World Tour. I guess it kind of is. Canada and the United States. Let's say the Y2J WWE Winter North American Tour. So come check it out. You can find out all that information on WWE.com. Maybe I'll get a chance to work with Ryback again. I always liked working with him. Always had fun. He's next. But first, I want to talk a little bit about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We went in depth about this last year when Kiss was finally invited and inducted. This year, we have the actual nominees and we have the actual inductees. So Green Day is going in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, entering their first year of eligibility. Hey, listen, I'm a Green Day fan. I get it. You know, they've always been kind of a Rolling Stone critic starling, but I do feel it's a little bit early for them. They're not as monumental as Nirvana was or Guns N' Roses. And going in on their first year of eligibility when it took Sabbath and Kiss, I don't know, 20 years, 15 years to get in, Deep Purple is still not in. No Cheap Trick. I mean, no Bon Jovi, no Motley Crue, no Ted Nugent, no Iron Maiden, no Judas Priest, no Journey. I mean, there's so many bands that have been omitted. So Green Day to go in first ballot, it's a little bit cheeky on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's account, but that's not surprising. They're always kind of like that. Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, I called this last year. When Joan showed up and played with Nirvana, replacing Kurt Cobain for their induction, I knew that it was only a matter of time before they were getting in. And, you know, good for her. Joan Jett deserves to be in. I'll go with that 1,000%. I agree. Bill Withers, Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone. That's a classic hit. You know, they like to induct those guys, so I'm not going to say he shouldn't be in there. Lou Reed, inducted 96 with Velvet Underground. That's a pretty legendary guy, so I'd go with him. Stevie Ray Vaughan in Double Trouble, absolutely. That's my favorite inductee this year. I'll be excited to see that. And that should be a great jam to see who shows up to play Stevie Ray Vaughan tunes. So influential as a blues guitar player. One of the greatest blues men of all time. Paul Butterfield Blues Band, that's another kind of a mainstay band you hear a lot about. I couldn't name one song by them. The Five Royals, early influence award. And finally, Ringo Starr goes in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a solo artist. It says award for musical excellence, but I asked Paul Stanley. He said Ringo's going in as an individual. So long overdue. John, George, and Paul are all in as solo artists. I know people like to take the piss out of Ringo and cut him down, but let's be honest. The most famous drummer in rock history needs to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Plus, as a solo artist, he has 6 top 10 hits on his own. A lot of people don't know that. He's not just going in because he's the drummer from the Beatles. As a solo artist, he has had a lot of hits on his own. He tours every summer with the Ringo Starr All-Star Band. Thankfully, Ringo is another guy that was on my list forever of a guy that should be in there. And I'm glad that he's in there. Congratulations to Ringo. The ceremony takes place April 18th at 2015. The general public will be allowed to attend. I know because I was there last year seeing Kiss, yelling and screaming for my boy, Paul Stanley. Love Paul Stanley. My 100th guest on Talk is Jericho. And he is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, deservedly so. Hopefully next year, please Deep Purple, please Iron Maiden. But this year, I'm gonna hang my hat on Stevie Ray Vaughan and Ringo Starr. Excited about that, and Joan Jett as well. Now, let's go over this, though. Over the next few years, there's going to be a lot of artists that become eligible to join the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And the criteria is you have to be 25 years after the release of his or her debut record. But they also must have demonstrated some contribution to the development and perpetuation of rock and roll, longevity, ticket sales, all that sort of stuff. So let's take a look at some of the artists who will become eligible for induction over the next 5 years. Mariah Carey, 2015. Don't even discuss that. I don't think she deserves to be in there at all. Not rock and roll. And not even Madonna. Madonna is rock and roll. But, you know, Mariah Carey, she sold like 200 million albums. She'll probably get in. She's had more number one songs than any other solo artist. So numbers-wise, I guess she deserves to be in there. But as a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, absolutely not. But we know that doesn't matter. Wu-Tang Clan, whatever. Hole, definitely not. Please don't put Hole in there. Sheryl Crow, I can see Sheryl getting in. She's pretty famous, got lots of crazy good tunes, and definitely not a lot of drama with her, so we should think maybe Sheryl will probably end up in there. Jeff Buckley is a guy that could be up for it, and not a lot of people know Jeff, but he has that street cred through Rolling Stone, which tells me he might get in. Oasis, I don't know if they had the longevity. You know, I'm not sure if they could get that. Beck, definitely not big enough. I'm reading this off a Rolling Stone article. So Radiohead, not big enough. But I'm sure there's people that will go, Radiohead should be in there. But my point is, if Deep Purple's not in there, no freaking way Beck and Radiohead should be in there, in my opinion. All right, the Notorious B.I.G. I know the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame likes having hip-hop guys in there. And he's got a lot of street cred, you know. But I don't think there would be much of an issue if he went in. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of one of those guys that probably will end up in there. Weezer, I don't know if Weezer really is a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame caliber band. You know, but once again, they have a lot of cred with Rolling Stone. So I would say they'll probably be a candidate at some point. Dave Matthews Band will probably go in. I mean, their numbers alone are huge as a draw. Longevity. Dr. Dre as a pioneer should be in there. I think Rage Against the Machine should be in there as a pioneering act as well. They did something no one had ever done before. Plus, they're darlings of Jan Wenner and Rolling Stone magazine. So I would definitely have not an issue if they went in there. But once again, I'm saying this all with a grain of salt. All these guys could be in there, but man, we need to get some of our guys in there too. Some more rock guys, Ted Nugent. And like I said, the list goes on and on. Cheap Trick, Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, Journey, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest. I mean, Ozzy is a solo artist. So many of those type of guys that need to go in there before we're talking about, you know, Mary J. Blige going in there, Blur. Pearl Jam, there'll be a first ballot. What's the word I'm looking for? Inductee. And they should be. I mean, it's Pearl Jam. I've got no problems with them being in there right away. Smashing Pumpkins, I don't think Pumpkins have the longevity, but they definitely have the street cred, you know? So it's possible, but once again, if they get invited, who shows up? Is it just maybe just Billy Corgan could get invited because there's really not much of a band at this point. So a lot of debates about who should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But my thing is Deep Purple for sure needs to be in before we even talk about this any further. At least Ringo Starr is in. Before that, my triumvirate was Kiss, Rush, Deep Purple. Rush and Kiss are in. Ringo is in. Now let's get Deep Purple in there, and let's get the other amazing rock and roll band from America. Cheap Trick needs to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. I'm going to get off my soapbox, leave it up to my buddy Eddie Trunk. He can flip out on that. I'm not as concerned. I am excited about all the guys that are getting in this year. I'm excited to have Ryback, the big guy, is on. Meat Hook Clothesline, Feed Me More. But first, let's win you a little instant cash Ola this weekend at DraftKings.com. That's what I'm talking about. That'd make the weekend a hell of a lot better, wouldn't it? Make a little money for Christmas. It would also take some of the sting out of losing money in your season-long fantasy football league. Here's the cool thing about DraftKings. You can pick your team in minutes, and you can stack it every time you play. And if you head to DraftKings.com now and use my promo code Y2J, you can play free in the $10 million fantasy football world championships. Come on, that's some serious cash. And you can get a free shot at winning just by using my promo code Y2J. At DraftKings.com. Take a free shot at becoming the world's next millionaire. Go to DraftKings.com. Use my promo code Y2J. Pick the greatest team you've ever had, and then you make your money and never give it up. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. If you're going to play fantasy football, play it with the pros. Play it with the best online today. DraftKings.com. And do it right now. People!
Talk is Jericho.
All right, we're backstage here at the famous Joe Louis Arena. Or is it Joe Louis Arena? Joe Louis?
Joe Louis.
Joe Louis, if you're from Canada. And I'm with the big guy, Ryback. And you're literally back, man, which is cool because when I was here in the summertime, you had to leave because you had a groin injury.
Yeah, no, I'm very thankful to be back where I am now. The January of last year, I actually strained a groin in Canada in one of the matches, and you just keep going. You know, we go 5 days a week, and if I would have given it probably a couple weeks, it would have been fine. And it was one of those things, just kept going. And then about 4 months later, my right side just went out in the ring randomly. I think I actually slipped on one of Stardust or Gold Dust paint in like my right side, and I'd just been overcompensating. And then at that point, then you start straining your ab muscles when you're growing. Both your groins are like that. And then my right ab ripped off. And then over in Europe wrestling, it was me, Curtis Axel, and Orton wrestling the Shield every night. And Roman Reigns actually gave me a Samoan drop in my right ab. I felt it just rip off. And next morning, couldn't get out of bed. And that was the beginning of the tour. And I ended up going about 3.5-4 more months. And then finally, my left ab tore off. And we were in Vegas. And I actually got a great reception there. It was my
last
show.
I remember that, yeah.
And I wasn't supposed to do anything that night. I'd got an MRI, and they said, both your abs are ripped off. You got to get this fixed. And we'd already advertised the match. And it was like, oh, don't worry. You don't have to don't get in the ring tonight. And then the crowd was the way they were. And Orton just looked at me. He's like, you got to get in the ring, big man.
Yeah, because they're all chanting, Rye, back.
Yeah.
Because they knew you were from there, or they just liked your vibes.
Because we'd been there a few times before, you know, as when I – going the route that I was at the time, and they hadn't been that good.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd actually boo me, and then it was just a complete 180.
That and, was just an anomaly.
I think
right?
that kind of triggered the whole coming back and the way we did. And so thank you, Las Vegas.
but then after that, you had to go away for a while.
Yeah, I was gone about 10 weeks.
So one groin was pulled, then the other, then one ab was torn in the other.
Yeah.
That's amazing, man.
And no, like,
so
but
what were you doing? Like, what was your plan? I'll just keep going?
At that point, I was just like, I didn't want to let Curtis Axel down. Mm-hmm. You get in the road, you stay booked, and you want to be consistent with that. And I think wrestlers take pride in kind of showing up every day, and that was something that, like, I was able to still go work out, and I was in a lot of pain, and it wasn't easy, but it was one of those things, like, I take a lot of pride in not missing time, because mm-hmm. I was out so long with that injury of the year and a half, mm-hmm. with the ankle injury, and I'd gone about 3 years before had anything take me out, and it was just one of those deals I had to take a couple months and get fixed.
So. Get fixed up, yeah. I always say that, like, you know, if you're talking about, like, a football team or a hockey team or something, they have the DL list, and that's guys that are injured that take a game off or a week off.
Yeah.
I bet you if you went through our roster, our locker room, probably 10, 15, 20% of the guys would be on any other pro sports DL list.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Absolutely. It's amazing when you see this, the environment that it's, this isn't for everybody, and that's mm-hmm. where I think the love and the passion comes in, and you take pride going out there each and every night, and like I always said, like live event, TV, pay-per-view, treat them all the same.
That's right. So. You have to, exactly. And that's how you get to where you get. Now, you've always had a real, the passion is a word, but it's a real drive, a real look in your eye. That you're very serious about what you do.
Yeah.
And I noticed that from the first time you ever came in here when we did the NXT for the first time. Is this something you've always wanted to do? Did you have other things that you wanted to do as well? Or
no, I started watching wrestling when I was 5 years old, and mm-hmm. my first memory was Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan in Vegas. Mm-hmm. I just remember the yellow tights and the black singlet, and then around to like 10, 11, I really just fell in love with it, and I was a guest bell ringer in Vegas at the Thomas and Mack Center, and got to
for what? What does that mean? What do you mean?
I won 20 something tickets on all the radio stations when they came to town. It was like the first live event they'd had there in years.
Oh,
and,
really?
And I, at that point, like Razor Ramon is my guy, and but I knew everything, and they had all the like they had a news contest. I wrote a letter why I should be the one to win the front row tickets and to get to be meet a wrestler backstage and be the guest bell ringer. And the news people said my letter blew away.
Really? Because
they said we felt your passion through your letter. My mom still has it.
How old were you?
12 years old.
Oh, that's
and,
great.
And that was the moment I knew I wanted. Like I was sitting front row, and I remember I thought the ring was way smaller than I go, that ring's not the size that it is on TV.
Right.
And the guy goes and checks, obviously. And he's like, no, this is 20 by 20. I go, no, it's not right. And but it was that was the night that I decided I wanted to be.
So what was your job as the guest bell ringer? What did that entail?
They tell you into the ring, and they were like debating whether to let me in the ring or not, because mm-hmm. they go, it might be too dangerous. We'll let him on the apron.
Mm-hmm.
So I get on the apron. I got my World Tour de Force hat on, my Razor Ramon shirt and necklace, and my little jumpsuit and athletic shoes. And they're waving at the crowd. Everyone's cheering for me. And they gave me, I still have it at home to this day, a WWF bell hammer.
Oh, like for the bell, to ring the bell.
Which I've never, here we don't even have.
What do you ring? What was it? What do you ring the bell
with? It was a little hammer with the WWF logo on it, which I've never seen.
No kidding,
never.
When
I was in developmental, we used it at Deep South Wrestling, actually. And I got it back because I'd left it there when I got transferred to OVW. And it's why I got it sitting on my mantle at home. And it was the Body Donnas versus Barry Horowitz and somebody else. Dr. Tom Pritchard and Chris mm-hmm. Candido, in which Dr. Tom was the most instrumental trainer I've ever had in my career, and really
Full
helped
circle.
Me a lot. Yeah, and so but I was here. I am at 12 years old, you know, ringing the bell for him in the opening match. And
so obviously they didn't tell you that it was that you know that there was a show business thing. So what do they just when the referee points at you, you ring the bell?
Yeah,
or?
they look at me, then ring the bell. And I sat there. Inside, right by the ring there, and I remember somebody was either Candido or Dr. Tom got punched, and they spit, and it landed on my pants. Oh my God, this is so cool! And so that was to this day, that was the night though that I knew.
Yeah, did the Body Donnas win?
I'm pretty sure they did. Yeah, I don't think Barry Horowitz ever.
I'm just envisioning. So I'm just kind of intrigued by this. Did they have anybody like an official sitting beside you? Like,
yeah, there were two other people and I can't remember at the time, but whoever was
like a Mark Yeaton type or something. Yeah,
whoever was ringing the bell for regularly.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and there I am, and then I brought all my best friends. I literally brought like 15 kids and I interchanged every match with my friends. Uh-huh. I sat in the front row the whole night. And then they three seats that we had, they switched out, and it was a great experience.
But that's what you said, I want to do this.
Yeah,
that's
my first physically getting to see it and remember it.
Yeah.
And it was funny, like Kane was on the show at the time as Dr. Isaac Yank, and I give him a little bit of trouble over that at times. Yeah. And
you just worked with him last night. Yeah.
And Goldust was on it, and I remember Bret Hart and Diesel was the main event in the old blue steel cage.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was.
Were you always a big guy?
As a kid, I started working out at 12 years old, like push-ups, squats, and all that. And I always had a peak in my bicep and like a little hole in my forearm. And kids in school would always like ask me to flex. And I was always like the fastest kid in the neighborhood in school growing up as a kid. And I love sports. And whether it was hockey season, we played hockey, roller hockey in the streets, and basketball, football. And I'm really glad that having that background as a kid and being athletic, and it really helped me making the transfer over to WWE as I got older.
There's also a discipline thing too. You know what I mean? Like when you're training and just the concept of being in the gym, because I think I started working out when maybe I was 16 or 17, but just then it's like, okay, every day after school, before you do homework, I got to go do my Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yep. Remember that easy curl bar?
Yeah, oh, I had one of those in my bedroom.
You put it around your neck and it had a bar with a little divot in it. You put your arms in there. That was supposed to make your arms bigger.
Yeah. Right? I have memories of being, I remember my first job was at Toys R Us, and they put me up in the attic. I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, I was pretty big at that time. And they're like, oh, you can carry all the big ticket items for Christmas. And I remember, though, I had no idea about nutrition at the time. And I'd come home and I'd have like a big bag of Skittles and candy bars and sodas, but I'd be in my room curling with it. And why isn't this working? And, it's because I'm eating all this junk.
It's funny, too. Like, I don't know how it is now because, I mean, I don't know how the kids get into bodybuilding nowadays, but when I was a kid, it was the magazines, the Weider magazines. Yep. And you'd always go through, even though it was like, I don't know, 88, 89, it was still all about Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
And you'd read like Arnold's body blasting bicep blowout workout. And like, I don't know if he ever did this. I don't know if he had anything to do with it, but you'd go home and try and do this exact workout verbatim. And it would take like 2 hours.
Yeah.
It'd be like the worst ever. It would kill you.
Arnold was in the gym. Like, he worked out for hours on end.
He did,
Like, and I don't know if he was talking to during that period and socializing.
Yeah, maybe,
he likes
picking
to talk
up chicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the man, though. I told you that before. Like, I read his book, and he's just one of the most inspirational, people I think I've ever witnessed. He came from nothing and made himself who he is, and it's just a tremendous story.
I mean, for me, I love it, too, because obviously being a wrestler and being a rock and roll band, people get mad at both of those. Oh, you can't do this because you're that. You can't do that because you're this. But I remember reading his book when he told people, like, I'm going to be the biggest bodybuilder in the world, and the biggest movie star in the world, and like, some little crappy little town in Austria, and went and did it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty inspiring thing. Yeah. And I read that, like, just a year ago, and it's like it gave me extra inspiration, you know?
I'm the same, and it's like what I've always had very big goals for myself, and I have at home, I have all my vision boards and goals on them, and so many of them have come true, and some of them haven't right away, but I don't forget them, and things don't happen overnight. And
now, how do you mean vision boards and goals? What is that?
So I'm a big believer in like the law of attraction and positivity, and there's a book called The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. When I was released from WWE, Festus at the time, Luke Gallows, I was working at Smoky Bones in Louisville, Kentucky, which is, I got released from OVW and was, I was ashamed to move back home to Vegas because I got fired randomly out of nowhere in developmental. Nobody saw it coming. At that point in my life, I saw it coming, though, so I wasn't shocked.
Why is that?
I was just in a very negative mindset. I came in through Deep South Wrestling with Bill DeMott, who is, to this day, he's the trainer down there at NXT.
Yes.
He was very hard on me, and there were eight-hour days.
Because you're probably a big-muscled guy.
Yeah. But he was always he was great to me outside of it. And he pushed me because I was always very hard on myself, too. I want to be the best, and I'm obsessed with this. And the results didn't come right away, and I was new to all of it. But he pushed me, and he pushed me, and he pushed me. At that time, I wasn't quite – now it's the greatest thing that ever happened to me because I am who I am because of how he trained me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at the time, though, I couldn't take that negative reinforcement, and I wasn't in a – at the level of turning that around into a positive, and it just ate away at me. And I carried that over to OVW when I went over there, and eventually I just got released.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my mindset. I was very negative.
Gotcha.
And so I'm working at this restaurant, and I'm drinking every day, full-blown, for a year straight, full-blown, just heavy drinking, going to work, working out. That was my life. Going back to my little apartment, watching the WrestleMania DVDs, and just drinking. And I did that for a year, and I was just – I was really depressed and because I wanted to be back here. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't – I didn't understand why all that had happened to me, and I was ashamed to move home. I didn't talk to my parents for almost a year.
Wow.
Like,
because you felt so bad that you didn't make it?
I'd set out to go do this thing, right. And I failed at that time, and it was like –
This is when you were first signed, went to Deep South and got
– I was like 24 at the time, gotcha. 25. I got released, and it was – I mean, it was a tough time, and I didn't talk to anybody, and I Luke Gallows comes into Smokey Bones, and he left me a $30 tip, and he goes, he was at the time working with Taker up here.
Wow.
He was part of the Jesse and Festus thing, and he was getting a little bit of a run there, and he goes, you don't deserve this. He goes, you're one of the best guys I know, and you've always worked hard, and he goes, I hate seeing you like this. Go buy this book, The Secret, at the bookstore across the street. Here's $30. After work, I went and bought it, read it that night, the whole thing. And there's a DVD. I ordered the DVD. I watched the DVD every night for like 6 months. Mm. Just to, because it was, I was like, I'm so negative right now. And it turned my life around almost instantaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to OVW, developed the Ryback Terminator character at the time. And Danny Davis down there at OVW didn't charge me to come back. At that point, WWE had already pulled out at that point and moved down to Florida. And he says you didn't get a fair shake the first time around, and I want to help you out. And he saw something in me that maybe I didn't even see at the time, and he helped me out and got me back, and I got re-signed eventually.
You know, it's amazing, man, and I've said this all the time. I even just had Paul Stanley on the show a few days ago, and he said this quote. You mentioned how Arnold, and you got to tell this great Arnold story later on, but you mentioned Arnold kind of inspired you. For me, it was Paul Stanley, because he had this one line, and all my fans know what it is. The only people that tell you you can't do something are the ones that have failed.
Yeah.
The ones that have failed in their own dreams.
Yep.
If you want to do something, go do it, and don't listen to the negativity. And I learned that a long time ago, and I don't associate with negative people.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how great your life can be when you always see the positive side of things. And it's also amazing how many people only see the negative.
Yeah, and it's especially here in the wrestling business.
Right.
We know with social media, and you know, 20 people might, for every 20 people that love you, you know, there's that one that won't, hates you and wants you to retire and you don't belong here and you're worthless at this and that. So it's just it's the state that we're in the world in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I think we got to be conscious of how we think, and there's a positive to every situation.
Sure. So you said that was what led you to do a vision board and goals. You write them down on a piece of paper on a board?
My house at home. I have a meditation and massage room in there where I like got my massage table, my inversion chair and table, and I got all these vision boards, and I have all my goals, like possession wise, what I want for my WWE career, what I want for my life, what I want. I have my 15 reasons why I live my life, and that's like a Tony Robbins thing. And I just every week when I'm home, I go in that room, I just kind of glance over everything to remind myself why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And right by my door when I leave. Every year I do last year I did my like 13 goals for 2013, and I hit 10 of them.
Wow.
And they were, if you would have saw some of these, people would be like, you are legitimately crazy.
Yeah.
And I saved that board. I was like, wow, I can do, if I put my mind to it. And so
that's
this
incredible.
Year I did, I 13, I go, that's a lot of goals. I got to maybe start narrowing it down a little. So this year I did a little bit less, but, I've already hit a few of them, and if I don't, I'll continue them on to next year.
Sure.
But I got it by my door to remind me when I leave every week on the road, this is what I'm going for WWE. This is why I'm going out to do what I'm doing to reach these goals.
And that's what I was talking about earlier, and you've always had that intensity. That's the word I was looking for, the intensity. You've had that, and you've been through a lot because, like you mentioned, you started, you get fired.
Yeah.
You come back, do the NXT the invasion, which – in my opinion, it's still one of the greatest angles of all time.
I'll never forget that.
Like, so amazing. So tell us a little bit, like, how was that pitch to you guys? Did you find out that day, or did you know, like, a week before? Or?
Yeah, well, at that point of being Skip Sheffield, which was...
That's right, that was
which,
a whole
thank
other
you
thing.
For, I remember your second book, your heart skipped like Sheffield, I think was the reference, which at that point I was really honored.
That was a big push for you at the time. Yeah, Skip Sheffield was like a cowboy gimmick, and what was your
yep. Oh, man, it's...
Well, I remember when NXT started, all you guys came, and it's like, you know, it didn't really know, but I've heard, and I see all these guys, like, that guy, you know, I see Wade, he looks great, he looked great, and yeah. Like, his name is Skip Sheffield, but he's a cowboy who's going, yip, yip.
Yeah, from College Station, Texas, like, the most miscast character
exactly,
of all time.
It's a miscast, like, exactly.
Vince actually pulled me aside after, like, week two of that, and my heart was in it. I had a lot of fun doing that, and I got to go out there and just be...
Is that why you did it, just for fun, to be having
well,
a fun character?
Developmental Dusty Rhodes, actually, I was Ryback, okay. And doing kind of, you know, what I'm doing, and... he's like, you're such a funny guy. I want you to be like one of these football players we signed that has no clue about what we're doing in wrestling and just big, dumb, corn-fed meathead. And I was like, I was offended. I went home, you know, screw this, I'm not. And then, of course, the next day, I'm Mr. Positive. I was like, no, I'm going to embrace this. And I was like, but I'm going to kind of – I came up with this wild character.
No, quickly, can you do a Dusty Rhodes sound? Because everybody on the show over the last few months seems to have done a Dusty Rhodes.
Really? I don't know how good
can
I'm not.
Let's just try one.
Now, baby, you're this serious, intense character. And I want you to be one of these football players, baby. I want you to be like a dumb corn-fed meathead. I want you to come. I don't want you to have any clue about wrestling. You're just a happy-go-lucky Texan, baby.
That's along great. The line. That's great.
And and I was just like, oh God. And
but
so
then
I
you came, throw yourself into it.
Yeah,
then.
And I did my first promo down in FCW at the time, and I put butter spray all on me. I had these tight cowboy jeans on and these brown shoes, boots, and the whole class, round of applause, stood up, and
nice.
I was like. We were running with it, and it got really, really popular down there in FCW, and it got me called up to the main roster. So I'm thankful because
sure.
The whole deal is get out of developmental, get to the main roster,
right.
And you start over,
yeah.
Essentially. And
nobody's character from developmental really makes it up to the main show. Really.
The main goal is just get out of there and get up here and be seen, get seen by the right eyes. Yeah. And Vince pulled me aside after like week two or three, and like my heart was really set on this at the time because it got me up here, and he's like, this isn't you. He's like, you're going to make me millions of dollars being yourself. Mm. And I said, okay. He goes, don't do it overnight, but let's get away from this. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, oh, man. Like, I mean, that's great
sure.
for the boss to tell you that, but like, what am I going to do now? Because I've already just came on TV the last 2 weeks. And so we tried to like get away from it. Then, you know, the Nexus was the greatest thing ever because it allowed me just to be more me and be intense and be serious. And
right, so how did they tell you about the invasion? It was in Miami, right?
Yeah, and they brought us in, Vince.
That day.
And none of us knew what we were doing, if you know, what our careers, what lied ahead. And you got one shot at this. If you screw up, you're fired, essentially.
Wow.
It was very intense, and we all left that room, like, all on the same page, all of us. And we all, if we had our differences, we were gone. Yeah.
So and what did he explain to you?
It was just go out there and cause chaos. And we didn't know that the crowd was going to react like that and that the environment was going to be the tone that it was. And it was just, that's all I remember is you have one chance at this. Don't screw it up or you're fired. Mm-hmm. That is what just in my head.
Whether he said it or not, that's the vibe that you got.
Yeah, and that's all I remember. And it was just go out there and destroy. Mm-hmm. And it was like. It's a memory I'll never forget as far as just in looking out there and seeing the shock on people's faces. And
it was one of the coolest things in being in the business at that point for, I don't know, 20 years. I think that was 2010 maybe. I remember when Barrett came down, it was like, oh, what's going on? And then I knew it was happening as soon as I saw Tarver with that half mask
on.
That
set the tone, I think, for the
whole night. That set the tone. I was like, I get it. I've seen two guys. I guarantee if you would have stopped time, I would have said, I bet $1 million that seven of them are coming.
It's funny. I remember you actually pulling us aside one of those nights after, I can't remember exactly.
After a house show.
I remember the arena, though, still. Whenever we go, like, oh, that's the arena, Chris. Mm-hmm. You go, you guys have to cherish this. You might not ever get this chance ever again working at this level. And at the time, you don't, because you get brought in, and you don't, now after being here, you see how valuable it is, and you have to, working in those main events is a very valuable thing. And like, it's.
Well, I wanted to get that across to you guys because, you know, you have seven guys, and it's not really rookies, but, I mean, rookies to the system here, and this is not an entitlement. You know, this is not something that is going to last forever. Yeah. For some, I remember specifically some of you guys will be in the main events.
Yep.
Some of you guys will go to first or second match. Some of you guys will be gone.
And some of them haven't.
And here we are now. Back,
and some of them are gone. And
you and Wade and Daniel are still here.
Yeah.
Justin is still here, but he's kind of in and out of of the main show.
He's still trying to get back.
Yeah.
To...
Tarver's gone.
Otunga's at home.
I don't know where he is.
Yeah.
Darren got hurt, but he was kind of floating. But you see, and that was only 2-3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Things
right?
How and just you have to understand what you have.
Yeah,
that's why I go as hard as I do, and it's
Right.
You never know how long this is going to last for. And
which is exactly what happened. But I also specifically remember we went to Hawaii.
Yeah.
This is right after. There was that huge pay-per-view in, or maybe it was before, was it after SummerSlam?
It was after SummerSlam.
After SummerSlam, yeah. Right after.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went to Hawaii, and watching the match that you had, you took a backdrop or landed
Tyson
weird.
Tyson Kidd gave me a drop kick. It was me and Otunga versus the Hart Dynasty. And we had the hot tag, and I came in and took a drop kick. And my ankle, literally, I had my boots were made too narrow. Mm-hmm. I just got brand new boots, and my feet were wobbling on them. But I was like, oh, I'll be fine. And for whatever reason, my foot was wobbling when I got drop kicked, completely ripped out in three places. Oof. Tyson, I pop up and we did the entire comeback, which was a minute or minute, 15 seconds, something like that. Tyson had no idea. My foot is dangling as we're doing this.
Were you hopping on one foot?
No, I was running on it. I spiral broke my leg all the way up to my knee by running on a broken ankle.
Oh my gosh.
And my foot was like wobbling. So unstable, and I was trying to not put all the pressure on it. And I finally, he rolled me up at one thing, and I was like, my ankle's broken. And he goes, what? And we just kept going. And I finally, he jumped on a springboard off the top, meat hook, clothesline, 1, 2, 3. And I just rolled over, and I just remember being in the trainer's room after that. I remember you popping in, mm-hmm. and people popping in, and I was terrified to take my boot off. And they instantly took my boot off. They put me in the ambulance, and they rushed me to the hospital. They gave me whatever drugs to knock me out, and they put my ankle back in place, wrapped it all up, flew me back to Tampa, and my ankle and leg swelled up so bad from the flight.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a 9-hour flight.
I had to sit in my bedroom for a month. They couldn't even operate on me. And
because it was so swollen?
So swollen. And they, because usually they'd fly you to Birmingham, Alabama for that. They had to leave me in Tampa to do the surgery. I ended up, I lost about 40 pounds because my parents wanted to come down and stay with me. And this was one of those weird moments. I actually was reading The Power at the time, which is the second book after The Secret. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this was meant to happen to me. And I just took it as a positive. And I told my parents, no, I want to go through this alone. This is going to make me tougher. So I laid in bed for a month. Get up, I'd have like one of those little monster milks you're selling, mm-hmm. a couple of those a day. I lost 40 pounds before even the surgery from just lying in bed,
not being able to
train and eat. And I eat a lot of food. And they do the surgery, and the doctor he put metal through my nerves, and I lost all function of my leg. They did a bunch of nerve damage.
Wow.
It was just a freak accident, and which nobody, it was a broken ankle and leg, which is about probably looking at 3 to 5 months. After 3 months, my bones were all healed. But I couldn't. I had all these electrical shocks, and this was a horrific story and a horrific experience. Me not being able to sleep for months after surgery, like just
because the steel plate was through your nerves.
Through my nerves, my perineal and superficial nerves, and nobody knew it. But I kept saying that something's not right. This is normal. This is normal. We do a second surgery. Nothing. A year later, I'm at WrestleMania in Atlanta, meeting with all the doctors. I'm still not able to walk. And that was the most – I remember Stone Cold and The Rock being there, and I remember I didn't want to introduce myself to anybody because I was embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I was out for a year, like,
what's wrong with this guy?
Yeah, like, and it's like, I don't know what's wrong with me. I know I can be right. But so I said to him, I go, please take the metal out of my leg. And three doctors told me I would never wrestle again, that I was done. They took the metal out of my leg. The doctor in Birmingham that did it, he goes, I cannot promise you anything, but this will give you the best chance at coming back. At that point, I was into full-blown meditation on just trying to get my mind as strong as possible, telling myself I'm going to overcome this. They took the metal out. I woke up from surgery, and I just mentally knew I was going to be okay. Hmm. I still to this day don't have function of my big toe. It won't go up because they say it can take years for your nerves to grow back.
Right.
But I was back, I think, like 3 or 4 months after that. WWE gave me the opportunity to come back, and I said, just put me on the road. Let me work this out, because at the time there was talk of putting me back in developmental maybe, and I just said, please just put me on the road. I need to be in there with guys I can trust, mm-hmm. and let me work through this, please. And they gave me the opportunity, and then, you know, Ryback was born.
All right, so we'll talk more about how you came up with the Ryback gimmick and character. We'll also talk about CM Punk. You worked with him a lot, and I'm sure you have some thoughts and some reactions to what he said recently about you. We've got lots more coming with Ryback, but first, I got to take care of some DDP yoga. You know how much I love Diamond Dallas Page's fitness program. I do it. Ryback does it. And I'm not kidding when I say I'm on a mission to get everyone to do DDP yoga. I'm such a believer because what it's done for me and so many of my friends. Listen, DDP yoga literally saved my career, my wrestling career, my music career, my podcasting career. I couldn't even sit down in a chair. I had so much back pain. I wouldn't be in the ring. I wouldn't be on stage with Fozzy if not for DDP and his amazing yoga program. But hey, you don't have to be a pro wrestler or an athlete. DDP has designed DDP yoga to work for all ages and fitness levels. He's got beginner workouts, intermediate workouts, advanced workouts. Something can fit you at whatever stage of physical fitness that you're in. All of them available also on MP3, so you can do DDP yoga on the go like I do. Listen, I do it in hotel rooms, backstage at venues, even on the Fozzy tour bus. There's enough room in the back lounge for me to do stand-up. It's a great 30-minute exercise. I love doing it. Because you listen to my show, listen, you're the sexy beast. Talk is Jericho, Armada. DDP is hooking you up with a great deal in the Max Pack. It's got 15 workouts. You get a nutrition guide, poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP yoga, and you'll get the workouts on MP3 so you can exercise anytime and anywhere you want. So go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho to take advantage of a special offer only available to you. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. One more time, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And you can find this great deal by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. I want you to get in the best shape of your life, and DDP can help you get there. I guarantee it. Check it out today. You want to know how to make someone smile this holiday season? Send them some flowers from the Homemade for the Holidays collection at Teleflora.com and use the coupon code Jericho to get $15 off. That should make you smile too, right? Each bouquet is hand-arranged in an exclusive Teleflora vase, or is it vase? I'm from Canada. That can be used for years to come. And Teleflora has a ton of special bouquets to choose from as well. You can give the holiday centerpiece, which comes in a ceramic serving bowl decked with boughs of holly. Or how about the Teleflora Merry Mug Bouquet, a bright bouquet delivered inside a holiday mug that can be used later for coffee or hot chocolate or any beverage of your choice. That sounds sweet. That sounds elegant. I like it. You can visit Teleflora.com now. You can also enter the Homemade for the Holidays sweepstakes to win a trip to New York City to meet the cake boss, Buddy Valastro, or hundreds of other great prizes. You know, chicks dig flowers. Women dig flowers. It's a great gift for your mom, your mother-in-law, your girl, anybody. Heck, I'd be happy if someone sent me flowers. Okay, ladies, if you want to send me flowers, you know how to do that. Teleflora.com. And if you use my coupon code Jericho, J-E-R-I-C-H-O, to get $15 off, that even is better and makes you even happier. It's Teleflora.com. Beautiful, fresh holiday bouquets, always hand-arranged, always hand-delivered. Always for you and me.
Talk is Jericho.
We're backstage here at the famous Joe Louis Arena, and I'm with the big guy, Ryback. Now, what exactly was this something you were thinking about? I mean, obviously, being home for a year plus just talking to you right now, yeah. And I know we've spoken about this before when we worked last year, whenever it was, that it was probably driving you a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Were you just thinking of ideas and characters, yeah,
well,
and angles?
It was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. One, it got rid of the whole other persona, first of all, and allowed me to
Good
come
point.
Back as myself. Two, I ordered on every WWE DVD. I would sit and watch, because all I could do was rehab, train, and watch matches. It changed the way that I watched matches. I would sit there and just watch and pause and, what would I do in this situation? And I started taking notes. And I have notes in my phone. I have my playbook. Because we wrestle every night, 5 nights a week. And you don't want to do the same things over and over again. And I have everything broken up into different categories. And it taught me to study differently because I had the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have every WWE DVD and along with a lot of independent stuff. And
so you were watching everything.
Yeah. And to this day, I still go home. I go home. I build a gym at my house. I got, which you're on my wall of top WWE guys that I inspired.
Nice.
Which I'll have to show you
Thank
some
you.
Pictures of it. I go home. I train. I watch matches and try to get ready for the week ahead because every week I try to better myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's the mindset you have to have here to succeed with the talent
we have.
It is.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you get left behind.
That's right.
But it's. Yeah, I went through all that, and that's where I kind of got into realize, like, I can't physically do this. I have to mentally do it in my head. Mm-hmm. So I would watch these matches and just do it in my head. And you'd see a spot or something. I was like, okay, I can do that. But what would I do? And then so – and that helped me tremendously.
And what exactly was, is the mindset behind Ryback? You mentioned it was like a Terminator character.
Yeah. No, I was sitting – this is a funny story. I'm sitting in – living with a good friend of mine, Pat Buck, in our little two-bedroom apartment in Louisville, Kentucky, in which we'd always watch the – before the WWE Network, they had the WWE, the channel.
Yeah, like the subscription yeah, service. Or whatever,
which
yeah.
we had that. And every night it was a big bottle of Burnett's vodka. And
24/7, classic, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Drinking the vodka.
The drink of the vodka at that point, which was standard. And we always would watch wrestling. But one night, I think he was gone, and Terminator 2 was on TV. And I've seen it a million times. But yeah. Of course, I'm watching it again. It's on TV. And I'm been drinking quite a bit, and the bottle is probably gone at that point. And Arnold and I just sat there. I'm a machine. I'm like Arnold. I'm a Terminator. And I just sit there, because my name, as a kid, my friends called me Silverback, because they always said I looked like a little gorilla. And and so that was my first name in wrestling and developmental. And
that was you?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I remember reading Silverback.
Mark Henry actually ran with it for a year after I got released.
I assumed Silverback would be like the black guy.
At that time, Mike Bucci actually called me to get my approval after I'd been fired. Oh, is it cool if we let Mark Henry use your wrestling character? And I'm not going to talk to these guys. He just fired me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I look on TV and he's doing all my promos and I'm like, oh man, that sucks.
Yeah.
I guess. But so Silverback was out of the question there at that point now. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, Ryan Silver, I'm Ryback. And it happened right then and there. And then in my head, I was like, I've always had this intensity about me. And I set a goal and I attack it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the point, I lost track for a few years. And after reading The Secret and all that, like, I was back on track. And that's just how I am. I set a mission and then that's my objective and I go for it. So that was the whole inspiration behind the Ryback character,
mm-hmm.
which still to this day is not Terminator based, but that's how, like, my mindset.
Which is the way you think when you're in the ring. Which took off. Really, really big. I mean, I in my mind, because I was gone at the time, but always following what's going on, it was, and like I said, it might have been a year, but in my mind, it was just a few months after Ryback came on the scene that suddenly Feed Me More was like the most chanted thing in all the arenas.
Yep.
You know, it was very quick.
It was, I came in, and I remember, and it's, I told them, I said, just, because they were talking about doing vignettes or something like that. I go, no, put me on TV. I don't care with who, just let me go out every week. I will get over.
Mm-hmm.
I told them that straight up because they had all these ideas. They go, no, I don't, just put me in the ring and give me an opportunity. And so they gave me these locals. And I saw the size of these guys. And I was like, oh, man, like these guys are really tiny. Like this is going to.
That's right.
Like, what am I going to do? Like this can get old really quick. So but I'm always trying to think and be creative. And I was like, man, I just got to murder these guys and come up with interesting ways of doing it and throwing them around like a car wreck every week. And I think it was after week two or three, there was this kid, Benny Kamer was his name. They had all the legends watching on the TV in the back. And the match was bell rings, meat hook, clothesline, pick them up off the ground right into shell shock. And after the end of the match, I don't know where it came from. I just looked at the hard cam because these guys were so tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, feed me more. And it just... I wanted more.
Yeah.
And Vince, Road Dogg, pulled me aside. He goes, man, that feed me more. Vince really liked that. I go, really? He goes, where did it come from? I go, I don't know. It's just how I felt. And it's funny how, like, I'd always try to think of catchphrases before, and then this one came naturally, and it's just how I live my life, though. More's never enough, I say.
Yeah.
I want more. And it that's why I think it works, because I think every human being, we all want more no matter what. That's why I think it's so easy to chant.
Well, I think, too, is that the best characters are always the real person turned up to 12. I always say that.
I agree,
like, well, how can I get a character in wrestling? You know, younger guys will say, and it's like, what is your – who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you? It's always you just turned up. And like you said, the feed me more is your attitude on life. And I laugh, too, because I sat at home writing down catchphrases. I remember one that I wrote down was razzle dazzle.
Yeah.
This one's going to be over huge. Razzle dazzle. And you say it once or twice, and no one cares. And then I go out there and do that stutter, never ever thing, and people still love it to this day. You just never know what's going to get over.
Whatever, and it catches on. And it's just, you can't force this, I've learned over
the years. Yeah, you can.
We try to sometimes, and through developmental, and you're taught to try to come up with stuff.
Yeah.
But the people aren't stupid. Yeah. Like they, it's
you can't force feed something that has to be organic.
And then they'll let you know.
And even and that's what I was saying, the organic of Feed Me More and Ryback. And we got over really huge. I remember calling in, there's a radio show called Busted Open. It's a great group of guys.
They always talk well about me, so thank you guys.
They're good guys. Yeah. But I remember calling in one time, I said, listen, I was driving, and I was like, I'm going to call in. And I was like, dude, if they put the title on Ryback right now, they got a guy. You know, I had it all in my head. They could book it. Ryback wins the title. Then he goes and beats Taker. Then I had it because you were at that level where it was really, really, really popular.
People tend to – that's everything happens for a reason. And, looking back at that period, it was – I'm grateful for everything I've gone through here because it's pushed – you can give me $20 million and all the championships in the world. I'm not going to change who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm going to work harder than every day just because that's who I am.
Of course. You have pride.
I got put in positions that weren't for me. And, Cena went down with an injury.
Right.
We needed a main event guy. Well, let's see if he can handle it. And I went out there and I proved that I could. But our fans tend to be just look at things very, it was never for me. And I got put in positions to see if I could hang. And I did. And, I stayed very popular for quite a while until we decided to go the other way. Mm-hmm. And some things have happened. And I'm grateful for everything, even though I don't necessarily understand all of them. I don't agree with every decision that's made here. But it's not my company.
Well, the thing is, too, you're talking to a guy who understands. Because in 2000, I wasn't doing anything. Nothing. Yeah. And then suddenly one day I show up. Much like the NXT thing, except for I was going to go to Vince's office and say, I'm quitting. That sucks. And they go, well, you might not want to go in his office. Why? There's nothing you can tell me because you're winning the title tonight.
Yeah.
What? I beat Hunter for the title. People go nuts. 15 minutes later, I have to give it up.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, well, why would I give this up? People loved it. But it was to see how I reacted. Yeah. How does the crowd react? Can he do this? So now they know, okay, we got this ace in the hole.
Yeah.
Put him over here.
Yep.
And when the time is right, put him back in the game. It's the exact same thing that happened.
And you have to look at the big picture. And it had my goal was to be here for a year or two. Then absolutely, that was horrible. And, I'm a lifer. Like I want to be here as long as I love this and I have a passion for this and I'm obsessed with it. I always say.
Well, absolutely.
So I'm looking at. I'm just trying to improve every week. And you want them to know your worth, though. And it's just. For the amount, I know how hard I work at this and everything that I've done, and I firmly believe there's no one here that works as hard as me, and I'm very confident in that. Whether the fans agree with that or not, I know the effort that I'm putting into this, and I've stayed single, and I built this empire at home, and I have, my own gym, and I have my tape study room, and, each and every show I treat as the most important show of my career because I want to go out there. I want the respect of all the other wrestlers and the respect of the fans, and I want at the end of the day to know, I say, start full and end empty. Go out there and spend yourself each and every night and leave it all in the ring. And it's just I have an obsession for this. So it's just and it takes time. Stars aren't born overnight.
Well, and that's the thing. And you're definitely making, doing the right things. You can see the fact you keep getting, keep getting put back in the game, which I told you the whole time when we worked.
You did.
Because it was funny when I came back for WrestleMania 29, the original plan was for you and I to work. That's why I was like, I want to work with Ryback. Yeah. And then Vince changed his mind and went with the Fandango thing. But, I mean, then the reason why is because I was really impressed with the work that you did when you were in these main events working with Punk, because he's who you're in with. Now, how did you feel, a couple weeks ago when Punk went on the podcast and said all the things that he said, and there was a lot of comments directed at you? Having worked with you, I've never seen those type of things. So, I mean, how did you hear about this, and how did you feel about it?
Yeah, no, I said, well, Twitter timeline started blowing up, and then my good friend Pat Buck called me, and he's like, he was listening to it, and he's like, oh, man, he's not saying nice things about it. And I was like, and I went and I heard part of it. It's... Punk, he was always good to me when he was here, and I felt I was good to him. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things, he was never like that to my face, and I always thought we had good matches for the most part and on the live events. And to leave and to say the things that he said, it's like, I try not to take anything personal anymore.
Right.
And so whatever he's going through, if he feels the need to say that, I can tell you it's not true.
Right, because it was that you were dangerous.
Yeah.
You took 20 years off his career.
Yeah, and if I was truly that dangerous and this and that, I would not be here.
Mm-hmm.
WWE would not have me in the ring with guys like you, John Cena, and anybody else, Dolph Ziggler, Daniel Bryan, and Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, It's one of those things. It's like, come on, man. Why? I don't understand. If it's a personal thing with me, I don't know. But I have no ill feelings towards the guy. I wish him the best. And I just saw an interview with him on Fox Sports, I think, one of those and talking about his UFC career, where he said, he's like, there's a good chance I'm going to fall flat on my face. And like, I respect the fact that he's trying something new, whether for his own personal reasons. And like, the guy was always told his whole career that he wasn't going to amount to anything and this and that. And he obviously has a very strong mindset, and he was able to achieve a lot here in the WWE. I say, like, be thankful for all that you have. And there's good and bad with any job. And we all, you can choose to focus on whatever you want to choose on. But like I was telling you earlier, he was supposedly injured, this and that. And like, we take pride. He could have taken time off at any point. Like, as wrestlers, we take pride showing up each and every night and going out there and doing our job and getting on the road and making the next town and making every show. Like, and like, he took pride in that, and I know he did. So like, to sit there and then to point fingers at this and that, I don't understand that mindset, and I don't know what's going on through his head. But like I said, I'm not going to take it personal. And like, everybody here in the WWE knows the real Ryback, and it's like, when guys come up to me and like, don't worry about it, we know, you know, we all know that's not true.
Right, like to say you were careless to drop him on the table.
Yeah, and you know, like, that's one thing on actually the gorilla press off the end of the table deal where we missed part of the table, and like that whole situation. The what really happened was that was when it happened, I went to the back. I felt horrible about that, and it was one of those things. It was, there wasn't a lot of room, and we were angled wrong, and it happened. And we all know things go wrong sometimes, and I apologized to him in the back. And he goes, don't worry, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. And that was that. And so to make up the little scenario of,
that you were dumb as F.
And to try to, like, it's that never would happen. It never did happen. So it, why he said that, I don't know. But it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one of those things. You hear certain things sometimes and go, huh? I remember, I mean, superstar Billy Graham went off on me a year ago, scathing promos. He's going to dance on my grave, and he's going to crush my head in hell. And you wonder sometimes, like, what? You know, I've never really heard that before. But,
yeah.
I mean, like I said, from knowing from when we worked together for a month, 2 months, whatever,
yeah.
Quite a few times. House shows. We had table matches in Salt Lake City, Calgary, wherever. And it was always fun. So, I mean, you're a big guy, so some things are strong.
Yeah.
But that's... That's wrestling.
Yeah.
That happens.
We go out there, like, I always take, you know, you look a certain way, you can't throw
fluff.
But at the same time, like, I've always taken pride in like I say, with great power comes great responsibility in the ring. Like, you really do have to.
Sure you do.
There's a lot of impact with some things, but you want to make sure it's as safe as possible. And there's never been any other incident with any other people, so... You know, I wish him the best. So
I
hope he does well. And it's one of those things. Maybe he'll regret what he said. Maybe he won't. But he's always spoken his opinion, and it's fine. I'm not gonna go that route, though.
Well, I mean, like you said, I mean, for what I can say, I mean, I like working with you. Because like you said, you being the way you look, I'm a smaller guy, so I have to work strong, especially it's like, I love working with Big Show because he beats the crap out of me, but I beat the crap out of him because you have to, or else it just looks stupid.
I love getting hit in the ring. I don't know, it wakes
me
up.
Too.
I remember, it might have been the Money in the Bank, you whacked me, and I literally, I was like, hell yeah, that's what it's about, going out there, and it was safe, it was fine.
Yeah.
It's like, but that intensity comes across, and it's believable.
People can see that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's that energy. So
I mean, I always say, like, don't break my nose or knock out my teeth.
Yeah.
Other than that, hit me.
Yeah.
Hit me, man.
Yep.
It's all right. It's okay. I remember telling, who was I telling that to? Big E, guys of that size. Like, Harper and Rowan.
Yep.
When I worked with them this summer, it's like, you guys got to come in and nail me.
Yeah. Because you will not be here long if you don't. Like,
you're too big not to. It looks stupid. You know?
People won't buy it.
That's right. Exactly.
I remember they actually did media a couple weeks ago, though, but it's. You were one of the few guys, like, it was really cool for me to get to wrestle with growing up watching you.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, but they were, because they were asking me, like, I can't remember the exact question, but it was like, you exceeded all expectations for me, like, as far as just, you're a good guy. Like,
cool.
You've given me good advice, and, like, but you'll be honest, too. And if something sucks, you'll, like, that sucks, but you'll tell me why it sucks. Whereas I haven't had that with every other person necessarily, but you were always, like, you were just straight up with me. I always appreciated that because that just popped in my head because 2 weeks ago they were asking me about it. And it was like, Chris Jericho. I was like, he exceeded all expectations when we had our little program. So.
Well, there is a veil of secrecy sometimes in the industry. And I decided years ago, I think 4 years ago when I started coming back and kind of being coming back and forth, why am I not going to tell – I wish people sometimes would have told me the real story.
Yep.
Because how am I supposed to get better?
Yeah.
You know, and not everything is always great. I remember WCW being the backstage area. Hey, did you see the match? Oh, yeah. How'd you like it? Oh, it was great. Everything? Oh, it was all great.
Yep.
Well, like, okay, that means you didn't see it.
Yeah.
Or you just don't care because nothing is ever great.
Yeah.
This was good, and it's important to say the good, but this needs to be better because it's not cutting it.
Yeah.
It's not an insult. It's like, wow, I better work on this.
And by doing that, everybody wins. The fans win. We win. It just makes for a better product.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely, man. A couple final questions. I noticed this is just a personal thing. You always wear really baggy clothes.
I do.
You're one of the biggest guys I know, and you never, like, I'm wearing an extra small shirt.
I used to go that route, actually.
I
used to wear the tighter clothes, and then especially now when I go out, I get recognized and stuff, you know. It helps a little bit wearing baggier clothes. The bald head doesn't necessarily help before WWE, people would stare at you if you wear a tight shirt or
And
I don't care to have the attention when, you know, outside of this. And I found that baggy clothes, Bo Dallas actually told it best when I got re-signed to developmental in FCW. I came in wearing baggy clothes, and he didn't have no idea who I was. He was like, I couldn't tell if you were like a really fat guy with jacked forearms or like a really jacked guy. He goes, then you did the match, you took your shirt off, and I was like, oh, yeah, you really jacked.
He's just showing off his forearms.
It's one of the funniest stories this day. I mean, like, he just thought I had big forearms. So that story always cracks me up.
So you mentioned bodybuilding, bodybuilders before, and how Schwarzenegger was always your hero. Now, this is such a sad / super hilarious story, but you got to tell it. So you had the chance because Arnold was here just a couple months ago to promote. It was in
Brooklyn. I remember.
Yeah, one of the movies he had recently where he was a commando or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So we're backstage, and he's the one. Like I've never asked for an autograph from anybody or anything like that.
Because we see a lot of big stars walking around,
and I've never really. People are people to me, and but he's always been someone who's very inspirational, and I was, I'd like to shake his hand at least and say hi if the opportunity comes up. I'm not going to force it. So I'm in my gear. I'm all pumped up. And
you're in your gear, so you got your muscles are hanging out. No baggy clothes.
I'm the big guy, full blown right now. I come walking around the corner, all taped up, ready to go, literally face to face with the man Arnold. And he has his whole entourage behind him. He's leading the pack.
He just happened to walk around the corner the same time as you.
Yeah, couldn't have been more. And he stopped, and he's like, oh, hey. And I go, hey, Arnold. And we shake hands, and he's getting ready to tell me something. Like, we're going to talk.
He's looking at you.
Yeah, he looks me up and down, and he like has that smile on his face. And I'm, oh, he's impressed with my physique. This is the moment I've been waiting for. Like, he's, oh, you're the big guy, whatever he's going to say. Or, oh, you're the new Terminator, which has always been a goal if he's listening. And then out of nowhere, our former ring announcer, Justin Roberts, comes in like a hawk with his camera for a selfie with Arnold, in which he cuts in front of me, grabs Arnold around the shoulder, doesn't even ask, takes the picture, and I love Justin. But it was Arnold's entourage just like swarmed, and like they literally got him out of there. I'm standing there like, what the hell just happened? And I never saw him after that again.
That's it.
He stayed and took photos with the guys after, but I wasn't going to – I've never, like...
The moment was over,
and Arnold, if you're listening, I don't know what you're going to say, but I'm sure it was going to be good.
He was going to be, I want you to be the new villain in the next Terminator movie.
That was what was going to...
You have a bigger chest than I do. You look great.
Those arms, those pecs. Ryback, you're the ultimate man.
Did you say anything to Justin ever? Like, what?
I've talked to him after, and he feels horrible about it, but it was... The moment's gone. And that Justin likes getting his pictures in and posting them on his Facebook and all that, so I hope it was worth it, Justin.
When Arnold came to Baltimore way back when End of Days came out, and he was the guest host on Raw, and he was same thing. I was like, I gotta get a, I'm the opposite of you. I have to get a picture of him. I'm like a Justin, although I wouldn't have interrupted you. So I knock on his door, and I go in his dressing room. He's sitting there with three or four guys. He's just like staring at me. Now, he's not rude, but he's like, who the hell is this idiot? And I was like, hey, Arnold, are you having fun today? Absolutely. You ready to have a good show? Absolutely. Did you have a good time in Baltimore? Absolutely. Have any problems getting here? Absolutely. Can I take a picture with you? Absolutely. That's all he said was absolutely.
Like, very
and others like, get it on, get it over with. I got my picture.
Yeah.
But afterwards, I was like, that was a pretty asshole thing to do. But it's Schwarzenegger, so it's okay.
How many opportunities are you really going to have? Someone like that is truly an icon.
I did see him again, though, in Staples Center. He was with his son, Patrick. And then at that time, he's like, hey, Chris, how are you? So I was like, it worked.
He remembered.
He remembered, man. So well, hopefully someday.
Hopefully he remembers the big guy Ryback.
The big guy Ryback. Last question. What if you had to choose your favorite match that you've ever had, which one stands out for you?
Ooh.
Or a few of them?
Favorite match. There's two moments off the top of my head. the first Hell in the Cell with CM Punk was my first main event, and it was a lot. It was a high pressure situation, and the company was putting their trust in me to go out there and to close the show with Punk
as Cena's replacement, basically,
Cena,
right?
Cena, yeah. Taking Cena's spot, which was a very that doesn't get
doesn't
given anybody
it's not
that
lightly.
Doesn't happen, and Cena doesn't go down all that often.
Right.
He's a machine, and that Hunter actually came up to me in Gorilla because I was focused, I was ready to go, but he was like, "Just stay calm, man." He goes, "Just you got this. You're ready. Mm-hmm. You deserve this." And like I could just see the look in his eyes, the confidence, even made me more confident. Right. And I did. I do got this. I'm Ryback. Mm-hmm. And it was so for me to go out there and end the show on the top of the steel cage in front of all the thousands of fans and doing Feed Me More in my first main event, even though I didn't win the match. It was just a moment I'll never forget, and it let me know that I belong here. And then I'll say this, when I came back here just a couple months ago in San Antonio, and I came out and the crowd gave me the reception that they did. And like I did an interview in the back on the backstage app that I wished aired on Raw, because it was probably my best promo I feel I've ever done, and it was real. Mm. Like it was just it was a feeling I can't describe, that like the fans aren't stupid. And like after the year that I've had, it wasn't easy. And I love Curtis Axel, and it was a great experience and a lot of fun.
Doing the tag team,
and it was that time was very valuable for me to look at myself in the mirror and all that. And but to come back and have the opportunity after being out and that injury, and came back a little early with that, and for that crowd to react the way they did, it kind of set the tone, and they embraced me again. Mm-hmm. And it was like, thank you, because like it just gave me that confidence, because when you get used one way, then you know other things happen. It's hard to sometimes stay confident
that you're going to get back on track.
And I always believed that I was going to, but it was kind of surreal when it did. Mm-hmm. It honestly took a good month to set in for me that, oh, man, I'm back.
Yeah.
Like, so thank you, San Antonio, again for that, and for every crowd after that. And that was a moment I'll never forget coming back, and it felt like got to be myself again, so...
That's cool. Great, man. Well, you're intense, dude, and Feed Me More is back, baby. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much, Chris.
When you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. Yes, True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the TrueCar mobile app or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Then it's the third step. Very simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Now, some features are not available in all states, but with TrueCar, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. Never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the TrueCar mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. Go do it now. Thanks so much to Ryback. What a cool guy. He's such a positive guy, very goal oriented, very driven. I've always enjoyed talking with him. Very serious guy, but also good in the ring as well. I never had any issues or any problems working with Ryback. I would work with him anytime. We did table matches in Calgary and Edmonton, tore the house down. Good times with Ryback, and good times with all of you. Thank you so much for listening to the show and for schwazing Talk is Jericho. I know there's hundreds of thousands of shows that you could schwaz, and your schwaz is mine. If you're wondering why I say schwaz, because it's fun. I know it's supposed to be chews, but I like saying schwaz, so deal with it. Just like page, just like delicioso. And listen, if you're trying to finish up some holiday shopping, listen, you know where you got to go. Say it with me now. Amazon. You use my links through Talk is Jericho. You go to Podcast One. You click on the podcast free banner at the top of the page. Podcast One. You click on the keep a podcast free banner at the top of the page. Podcast One. You click on the keep a podcast free banner at the top of the page. And then you click on Talk is Jericho. You see all three of my Amazon links, Amazon UK, Amazon USA, and Amazon Canada A. And I bet there's someone on your gift-giving list who would love to have a copy of the new Fozzie record, Do You Want to Start a War? Or someone who wants a copy of the new book, Chris Jericho book, Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. Shameless shilling. I don't care. It's my show, but it doesn't matter. Whatever you want to buy, you can do it through through my Amazon links, and Amazon will kick back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees, no hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done, and you're helping me out in the process. Easiest way to support the show, easiest way to support me. Don't forget, guys, the Cinderblock Party Tour continues overseas in March. Belfast, Cork, Dublin, Nottingham, Wolverhampton, Manchester, Glasgow, London, Bristol, Exeter, Southampton, Brighton, Paris, Bretagne, Munich, Mannheim, Bochum. Go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information, all VIP information, and the Y2J WWE Winter Tour starts January 10th. Montgomery, Mobile, St. Louis, Las Vegas, Houston, Trenton, East Rutherford, Edmonton, Calgary, Jacksonville, Canton, Tampa, Fort Myers, Madison Square Garden, Toronto, Buffalo. I will be in all those cities. I'm looking forward to seeing all of you. I'm also looking forward to next show next week. I got Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. He's talking about his Broadway musical that I went and saw in Chicago, Dee Snider's Rock and Roll Christmas. He's one of my favorite people to interview. He's got a great, great show. Very, very cool. All about Christmas time. It's kind of like a rock and roll Christmas tale. Kind of like if Rock of Ages was about Christmas. So we'll talk all about that. All about Twisted Sister. All about being down and out and making your way back up to the top. Plus, we'll interview another special guest who's going to be very busy on Christmas Eve this year. So check all of that out next Wednesday. But in the meantime, and in between time, that's another edition of Talk is Jericho. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. We'll see you next week for Dee Snider with a big yeah boy.
We love you. Let me tell you something, people. You have made us feel awesome tonight.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.